Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 234, recorded January 12th, 2015.
Yeah.
I did it right.
You did.
Yay for me. I get points. I don't know what I'm accumulating all these points for, but there must be a really good cash in at some point.
Yeah. We'll figure out something.
Yeah.
So, greetings, Aquarimaxers.
This isn't our first of 2015, is it?
It's our second.
It's our second. Did I get it right last time, too?
I think so, yeah.
Wow, I'm on a roll. Wait till February, then I'll say 2014 again. Okay, we have today Tony in New York and Andrew in I have a question.
Yeah, you can say Quebec if you want.
Okay, well, this is that what that means?
Yeah.
Okay. It wasn't capitalized, and like, is this a nickname for this place? Anyways, he's from Quebec in Canada. And we have Matt in Perth, Western Australia. And DuckyLove83 from Twitter. I'm afraid I don't know DuckyLove83's real name. This is just going to go by code name DuckyLove83.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Catherine from Google+, and Sai in India.
Yeah.
So we're all over the place today, which I love. I think that's really exciting.
It is.
That's one of my favorite parts when we get communications from people all over the place.
Makes it fun, doesn't it?
Yep. Okay, so we're going to do Tony first. And Tony sent us a Google voice message. So we are getting that queued up to play for you.
Yep, because we're doing it live now. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of
fun. I mean, it's not live. He already left the message. We're just going to play it on a speaker into the field recorder.
That's what I mean by live.
As opposed to editing it in post-production.
Yeah, that's what I mean, is that we're listening to it in real time.
It's live. It's raw.
Instead of editing it in. Yeah.
Except really it's not. And
there it is. Okay. Now, we're going to hit it. We got to make sure the volume's all the way up here.
Speaker on.
And speaker volume all the way up.
Are you guys bored
Presumably?
Yet? I hope not, because we're just,
okay.
Probably should have had this done.
That's okay. It's kind of hard to do both at the same time.
Here we go.
Plus, it gives them a sense of suspense.
Do you feel suspenseful?
Oh, well, let's hope so.
Hello, Aquarimax. It's Tony from New York here. Just enjoying your podcast once again. Thank you for all the ideas for my fishery. I know that you're pursuing triggers for the hatching of Amphibia, for your Russian Red Daphnia. And gosh, all I can think of is probably not enough alligators in the water. Alligators, right? So, just saying. New York isn't really that far from Canada, so, Andrew, I look forward to hearing exactly where in Canada you live. Maybe we'll look out and you're within a day's journey of Tony from New York. Anyway, talk to you later. Have a good day.
I love that.
That's it. We just need...
Some crocodilians in the water. And maybe
that's
the hatching trigger. Well, we're going to be experimenting with that, as we'll discuss a little bit later, but thank you, Tony. That was an amusing contribution.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, Andrew, is this what we were just talking about?
Yeah, this is a good segue right into
Andrew,
because he's the next guy on the list.
And he says, so we'd been talking about the Daphnia.
Right.
After receiving your email, I did listen to episode 232 last night. Normally, I listen to the podcast as I'm cleaning tanks or doing aquarium stuff, but I happily rushed to this episode. I also got an appreciation for the show's reliance on questions from listeners, so over time I'll see if I can add something in the future, because I do want the show to continue. Yay! I get a lot of enjoyment out of the Aquarimax podcast.
Thank you.
I'm fine to go with the adventure of trying to see if the detritus experiment will work. After the show, I'll be doing it with my eyes wide open and not overly optimistic, which is fine. I always like to have a fish room project or two on the go, and patience is required for most of them. Actually, let me rethink that. Patience is always needed, and it's success that can be intermittent.
I really like that.
It's true. The weather is definitely not ideal for live shipments this time of year, and even in the spring it may be a gamble, as two postal services are involved, and even though it can go quickly, there is always a reasonable likelihood that it won't. I have a cousin in the States that if, come the spring, I have no success with the detritus, I'll try to convince her to look after some Daphnia for a while and bring them up when she visits home. I'll start my marketing campaign with her this month as a backup plan. She's not a big pet person. Granted, maybe a beta is exactly what she needs, and that would help get her started. Cheers, and thanks again, Andrew. Oh, and he has a P.S. He says, your geography discussion was definitely non-offensive. As an aside, Canada does have multiple provinces that have populations similar to or smaller than American cities like the metropolitan area of Salt Lake City. And the names of large Canadian cities get more mention in pop culture and the media than the names of the provinces.
True enough.
I work in La Belle Provence. Did I say that right? I don't think I said that right.
It's been a long time
since my high school French. I'm sorry if I totally butchered that. French is so beautiful when it's pronounced correctly. Not so much when it comes out of my mouth. He says, which is a beautiful place, but I live in Ontario, which also has its own redeeming qualities.
So he's working in Quebec, but he lives in Ontario.
Okay. Sorry.
That was my fault.
And it is also a huge province. To give you some context, I can drive and arrive in Florida in less time than it takes to drive to the Ontario-Manitoba border from my home. And each destination would add about the same mileage to the odometer.
Isn't that crazy?
That is really big.
Yeah, that does. That's a good way to put some scale to it. That's an effective image for.
What would be fun? I just had an idea. What? I don't know if it's anything even doable or even if it's just a weird idea. But I think it would be fun. I don't know if we could do something like on the Facebook page or on the actual web page where we have like a graphic.
Mm-hmm.
And we can, I don't know, if like, you know those little pin graphics? We could put like a pin in all the different places that people write to us from, and people could go and look at it and see all the different places that people have written from.
You know, I'm pretty sure that's possible.
I think that would be kind of fun.
And it would be fun, yeah, just to...
Maybe we should talk to our genius, fabulous computer whiz guy about it.
Yeah, we could ask John about it. You know, I know people do that. I believe there are already websites that are free and up there, and you can just do that.
Oh. Well, we'll look into it. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, I know that people have used it for, what do you call it? Kickstarter.
Oh, to show where people are contributing from.
So we can show where our contributors are from. Yeah, that would be fun.
Well, and I'm very glad that we didn't offend you.
Yeah.
That is certainly never our... intent. Right. We are sometimes trying to figure things out. So, okay, that sounds like a good idea, though, if the detritus doesn't work.
Yeah, that might work. And Tony had a good idea, too, you know.
We'll just send you some crocodiles. Did they have crocodiles or alligators in the Russian zoo that they came from? I can't remember.
Alligators.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe, you know... New York sewers, Tony could send the alligator.
You know, alligators, incidentally, are popping up in all sorts of funny places.
Where?
In, like, they've popped up in lakes and things where they don't belong. Well, outside of their range because people release them.
Why do people have the alligators?
That's another good question.
I can't imagine... that an alligator... I don't know. I mean, I suppose an alligator would make a better pet than a crocodile.
But still. Yeah.
It just... I don't know. That's a whole different can of worms.
Yeah.
That's for the reptile podcast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Shall we go to Matt?
Let's do it.
Matt in Perth, Western Australia.
Yeah.
And he starts out, did you know G'day is a shortening of good day? And I have to say, I did know that.
But it's
I get
cool.
another point today. Yay me! He says, from when Australians used to be proper English folk, now we just shorten everything and put an E or an O on the end. You'd become Russy if part of an Australian sports team. Kelly already has an E sound on her name, so it'd stay the same or turn into Kel. Oh, which I have to say, not that you were calling me this, but I hate it when people call me Cal.
So it would stay the same. In
yes, Australia. It would stay the same, or I would give them stink eye. I don't know why. I guess I always figured my name's only two syllables. People cannot, you know, they can expend the effort and say the whole two syllables.
That's funny.
Yeah. We Australians also like shortening things. Maybe it's got something to do with the heat over here. We just want to get the talking over with and find some shade. That's perfectly understandable. Monday, the 5th of January, was 44.4 degrees Celsius, and he says 112 degrees Fahrenheit here in Perth.
Ugh.
Wow.
And?
Safe to say my aquarium heating bill goes down in the summer.
Humidity was probably higher than it is here in the summer, too.
Probably. That's really hot.
Yes, it is.
Oh, cow. Wow. Do you have to actually... I don't know, that's so hot. Do you have to take provisions in the warmer months to keep your aquariums from getting too hot? Or is the house just air-conditioned, I guess? Probably, huh?
Probably, yeah.
Because that's really quite warm.
Yep.
Says we have two frogs now in our tadpole pond. Yay! They've given them the option of hopping away, but so far they seem to be sticking around the ponds to keep cool. I am a little worried about the dogs eating the frogs. I hope the frogs are quick enough to go hide in the pond when the dogs are around. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of frogs are they? Has he told us that before and I just forgot? Because
I don't think so.
That
he's
would
just,
be totally part
of
the course
for me.
He's
just telling us about the frogs.
This is just new. Okay.
I don't know what kind they are. That'd be interesting to find out, wouldn't it?
Should I ask?
I'm sure they're not.
Okay.
You can ask
anyway.
Well,
they're just, you know, they're all over the place, aren't they?
Well, I don't know if they're in Perth. They're not everywhere in Australia.
They're okay. Are they mostly on the, like, eastern coast?
They're mostly in Queensland area.
Okay.
But they're spreading. I mean, they're not just in Queensland, but that's where they... I guess that was the area they started in. I'm guessing
that Matt would do a kind of frog that was not such an invasive species, I'm sure.
Right, I'm sure he's not talking about cane toads.
We are, just in case you're wondering.
Well, we've had quite an experience with cane toads.
I have to tell you guys this, though, because... It just makes me laugh every time, this whole movie. There is this absolutely ridiculous documentary called...
Ridiculous in the sense that it's funny.
Oh, yes, yes. Not that, like, it's full of mistakes, just that it's hilarious. It's called Cane Toads, An Unnatural History. And if you have never seen it, try to get a hold of it. I think they have it on Netflix. Don't they have it on Netflix?
I don't know.
But... See if you can find it, because you will laugh your face off.
That's quite hilarious.
It is hilarious.
But it looks like it's on the exact opposite side of Australia, so
oh, okay.
I doubt
so maybe they're not
any
over
there.
There yet.
Yeah. But,
And I cannot imagine that Matt would be the one to introduce them over there.
No.
So tell us what kind of frogs you have. I want to know what kind of frogs you have.
Interesting. We had lots of personal experiences with cane toads when we lived in Hawaii. It's exactly the same species. In fact, the cane toads... that live in Australia, I believe, were introduced from Hawaii. So
I think it talks about that in the documentary.
Yeah, they're cousins.
Yeah. Well, they work better in Hawaii.
Yeah, they're not nearly...
It's a different kind of cane beetle.
Well, yeah, the ecology of Hawaii and Australia are quite a bit different. Mm-hmm. So in Hawaii, they just eat lots of roaches and cane beetles, and it helps everybody.
Roaches.
So nobody really worries about the cane toads.
Mm-hmm. We had...
It's a different thing going on.
But all around our apartment complex in Hawaii, they'd live in the bushes, the cane toads, and they'd come out at night and sit under the porch lights and...
Eat bugs. It was fun. And sometimes when I was taking a load of laundry to the laundromat that was just, you know, a couple of buildings away from ours, at night I would see this huge granddaddy cane toad. It was so gigantic.
Like dinner plate.
And I always wanted to take the camera. Whenever I took the camera, he wasn't there, and whenever he was there, I didn't take the camera. I never got a shot at him, but he was really big. Anyway.
In fact, you do actually, on the opening screen of your iPad is a picture that you took of a cane toad in Hawaii.
Yes, it's true.
Greeting you each and every day.
It was
with its
super early in the morning.
Cane toady little face.
I would walk to work before it even got light a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. And my commute to work on foot was like 5 minutes. But I would often meet cane toads. And one day, I had a camera with me and took a shot of this cane toad. It wasn't a granddaddy one, but it was a big cane toad.
It was a bit nice about picture. The size of your hand. It was a kind of a normal-sized one.
Yeah, maybe a little bigger than
well,
my hand.
Well, your hands are bigger than my... Yeah.
It was fun. Anyway, mm-hmm. I digress.
Okay, yeah, that was
but
our
we would like to hear more about
candy.
Your toads. Mm-hmm. I mean, your frogs. Sorry.
And he says the
frog and slip. Go ahead.
Did you just say that?
No.
Say it again.
I totally didn't say it.
Say it again, because they probably didn't hear you, because I started already talking.
Froggy and slip.
The froggy and slip. Ba-dum-tsh. Okay. The discus planted tank has stabilized with the plant population. The plants neither appear to be thriving or dying off. I suspect they have reached the limits of the current nutrients in the water. At any rate, it is not practical to set up any carbon dioxide injections or change the light fixture just yet.
Hmm. And you probably will have to do something like that to get the plants to do a whole lot more.
Hmm.
Depending, well, it depends, though. I mean, if you might want to try some root tabs or something, depending on...
Is that like the plant spikes, the fertilizer
well,
bits?
Well, kind of like that, yeah. Yeah, you can, in fact, use certain kinds of... Some people use the plant spikes for ferns and palms. I've used them.
In a fish tank?
Yeah, you break them up and shove them under the substrate. It's not my idea, somebody else's, but it works pretty well. You can't just use the normal ones for flowers and houseplants. You have to use the fern and palm one. But, yeah, you can use that. But I don't know if that would work in his particular situation. I think CO2 injection would probably be good, but like he says, he's not ready for that right now. It's not practical
right
now.
It's kind of a big, messy...
You know, it depends on what you mean, though. Because the CO2 injection means a lot of different things.
Well, that's true. I guess I'm thinking of the CO2, the ones that you used to do with the soda bottles.
The
and
soda
stuff.
Bottles and the yeast, there's that.
But I have but to then, say, I don't miss.
Yeah, but then there's the ones with the, the CO2 tanks. And those are quite a bit cleaner, quite a bit more expensive to set up. But then there's the middle road ones. These are kind of new, but they have... CO2 is generated by citric acid interacting with baking soda.
Hmm.
And it's kind of a new setup. It's much cheaper than the CO2 cartridge setup.
The really fancy ones.
But it's a little bit more expensive than the yeast setup, but it has the advantage that
it probably smells better.
It smells better than the yeast one, and it's also got a valve in it, a pressure valve. Mm-hmm. So you don't have the problem that occasionally, we had. When I was letting a bottle ripen, so to speak, to get ready, and then when I opened it up, it would fizz all over the place.
That was exciting.
Yeah, it was messy. But this has a little pressure valve that once it gets past a certain part of pressure, it kind of leaks it out. But because it's not created by the process of, yeast fermenting things, it smells better.
It's not stinky when it leaks it
right,
out.
Right, right. It's just carbon dioxide in a much purer form than... all the fun stuff that you get in there when you have yeast eating protein powder and sugar and that kind of stuff.
So, well, cool.
Anyway, that's something interesting to look into. But I guess he's not ready for that yet. But maybe when he is, that might be a good way to go.
Yeah, it might be a little easier to do than some of the other setups.
I've been looking into it for myself.
You just quoted Napoleon Dynamite.
I know. Sort of. Paraphrased it.
Okay. Matt goes on to say, now, finally on to my question. I am considering moving the 180 centimeters by 60 centimeters by 60 centimeters, or 6 inch by 2 inch by 2 inch. No, that must be feet.
That's feet.
Okay. Maybe two lines in Australia is feet. Two lines over here is inches. 640 liter or 171 gallon tank into the space between two rooms. The aquarium as a room divider works great when done well, but the problem I have is how do I hide the plumbing? I'm not sure how to do that on my cabinet. Either way, some of it is going to be visible from one side.
Right, and this is the cabinet, that really cool cabinet.
The one
that
he built?
Yeah.
That was really pretty.
And you'd probably have to essentially build a custom... addition at least to the cabinet that would hide a lot of the plumbing. That would be tricky. But I did think of something. I mean, one thing you could do, but you'd have to replumb the whole tank and everything. Probably be impractical, but it's just an idea. to think about, not necessarily that I'm recommending it, but if you had the kind of overflow like you have in a lot of marine tanks, it's basically a big black sheet up against this, the short end of the tank that's going to be up against the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Assuming one side is up against the wall, but that's kind of the impression I'm getting. It's basically, you know, this black piece of plastic, and up at the top it's got little ridges in it so that the water overflows and goes, falls down there, and then down in that little area that you've made by separating that off the tank, you have the glass at the bottom is drilled, and you send that to a sump, and then you can pump it back up into the tank, and you could send it back up through the top of the cabinet, you know, behind the black part, up into the top of the cabinet, and then to the other side of the tank with a pump. And so you could avoid some of the plumbing showing.
There would be a lot of free...
Oh, yeah, it would be all kinds of work. But it might be one way to minimize it somewhat. But, you know, other aquariumaxers, if you have some ideas, if you've used large aquaria as room dividers and you wanted to minimize the appearance of plumbing, what have you done? We welcome your ideas, as I'm sure Matt does.
So hopefully we'll get some more ideas on that. So thank you, Matt. It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. Okay, DuckyLove83.
From Twitter.
From Twitter. And asks, what brand of slow-release vacation food would you suggest for 4 guppies, one that doesn't cloud water? They will be going 3 days without food.
And my response, this is, you know, representative of a couple of different tweets, I guess you call them. I'm still kind of new at the Twitter thing, but, well, yeah. Anyway, my response was that if they're going only 3 days, I wouldn't feed them at all. Because how long do I usually go before I worry about it?
2 weeks.
When we go on a vacation, yep. Usually 2 weeks is the limit. After that, I start thinking of what we can do to get the fish fed, but
we're not usually gone for more than 2 weeks.
But we have done as many as 2.5 weeks without feeding the fish, and never lost a fish as a result. Of course, we're not talking about fry. Fry are a different thing. Fry can die more quickly, but adult healthy fish doesn't hurt them at all.
It's better for them than trying to make sure they get fed those 3 days.
Generally, very true. Yes,
and it looks like they wrote back and also asked, is there live food I could add for them to snack on?
And you could. And my suggestion was amphipods or scuds. The rationale being that if you add Daphnia, they will be gone in, you know, less than 5 minutes. And none of them will last long enough for...
Guppies aren't very good at rationing.
No, they're not. And if you add mosquito larvae, you get the same result. Most food will be gone. They'll eat all of it, and if you put in enough that there will be enough left for a few days, then you're overfeeding them, so it's a problem, right? Scuds, on the other hand, are pretty good at hiding.
So it'll take them a few days to find them all?
Right. They'll hide in the gravel, they'll hide in the plants and things like that, and most likely, you wouldn't feed a ton of them anyway, but you feed a few, and some of them will slip into the gravel while they're catching the other ones and get away, and then over those few days, they'll, you know...
I'll give them something fun to do.
Give them something fun to do, and they'll
go hunt for them.
It'll be a fairly healthy way to do it.
Sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, I used to do. I had scuds in my goldfish tank in Hawaii. That 29-gallon we had. Whenever I would change the water, I would go into the gravel, dig up a few scuds, and the goldfish learned how to follow me around.
And follow the vacuum tube.
The gravel back, because I would lift it up, and the scuds would, you know, swim out, and the goldfish would grab them. Because there are a lot growing in that tank.
That's funny.
Okay.
Okay. So, have a good trip, Ducky Love.
Yes, and may your guppies Be well.
Yes. So now we have Catherine from Google Plus. And Catherine says, thanks for posting this video that was on the Daphnia culture. Is there an easy way to separate the larger Daphnia from the hatchlings? I'm getting into breeding axolotls. That's cool. Yay, axolotls.
It is cool. Someday we're going to have a few axolotls, I think.
I love them.
So what I suggested is catching all of them with a brine shrimp net. Just going through and catching babies and adults, everything, with a brine shrimp net. And putting them in a container. And then going through that net with a going through that water with a coarser net.
Which that is going let to the babies go through.
Catch the adults and let the babies go through, and then whichever one you wanted, babies or adults, you'd have them separate.
Okay.
Not my idea either, but that's what people have done to separate down.
If she wanted just the larger ones to begin with, could she just use the coarser net to begin with?
Right, but I think she wanted to separate out the babies.
For the wee teeny ones?
Yes.
Okay.
But you're right. If she does want the larger ones, then she could just...
I don't know how big baby axolotls are, so...
Quite small when they start out.
Yeah. How small are they?
Well, think of them as tadpoles. You know, that's essentially what they are.
Tadpoles. Seems like a tadpole kitty to an adult Daphnia, though. Excuse
me. Well, it depends on the Daphnia. I mean, they're a really tiny species of Daphnia. And they're larger ones, too. Like a Daphnia magna, they get big. And there are the... I don't remember what the species name is now, but I've had those diminutive Daphnia. But when they're fully grown, they're not much bigger than a newly hatched brine shrimp.
That's small.
Yep.
Okay, well, hopefully that works for her. And we have one more. We have Sai in India, and we talked to Sai last week, too. He's working on getting his betas to spawn. And he says, hi, thanks for your help. My betas spawned the day before yesterday successfully.
Congratulations.
Yes. I removed the female after nearly 7 hours. My male is still in the spawning tank taking care of the eggs. And then he got another email, or he sent another email. It says, please help me regarding the first fry food, as in my place I don't have any kind of live cultures except live bloodworms. I have already have infusoria going on, and I'm planning for egg yolk, too. I have two queries. One, can I finally powder or liquidize my adult beta pellets and feed the first hatching fries, as I don't have flake food since my betas hate it. Two, I've used Indian almond leaves in the spawning tank. Will that suffice for the infusoria growth for my beta fry, or do I have to culture infusoria separately and then feed them? I used the bucket method to spawn my betas.
Okay, well, there are a lot of factors involved, but if it looks like, if you can examine the water under a microscope and see if you've got lots of, you know, heavy infusoria cultures going in the bucket, probably don't have to worry a whole lot. And so it's kind of difficult to say, but assuming you've got, it kind of sounds like you have both infusoria cultures separate from the Indian almond leaves, and you've also got some in the bucket with the Indian almond leaves. That's the idea that I'm getting.
So there's
from
infusoria in the bucket with the betas.
Yes, but they're also separate
infusoria
cultures.
And there's also some
cultures
separate.
I think that's what's going on. You are probably okay for a few days, but the betas will certainly outgrow the infusoria fairly soon. And ideally, I would suggest baby brine shrimp, newly hatched brine shrimp, and or a nematode like a Walter worm, banana worm, microworm, something like that. That's what we used.
What if we did? It seems like we helped somebody in India one time just find a natural culture of microworms or something, didn't we? Because we couldn't ship them.
They won't make.
Yeah, we've tried to ship to India before, and they won't go through customs.
Well, what I mean is we've tried to ship internationally,
well,
and they don't go through
customs.
Yeah,
but I thought we specifically tried to ship it to India one time, didn't we?
I don't remember. Maybe we did.
I think it was when we were living in Hawaii.
Maybe we did. I don't remember.
It was a while ago.
But we don't ship internationally anymore because it doesn't work.
It really doesn't.
We have trouble with it. At least overseas, internationally, we have problems with that. I think it's possible to look for a banana worm culture because they live under banana trees. But if you're in a part of India where you have them, but it'll be too late now for this batch of betas, but It is possible that if they have a good start with Infusoria for several days, and it's a nice, robust culture of Infusoria, they'll grow enough that they'll be able to eat some, if you really finely powder your betta pellets, some of the bettas might be okay. I've heard of people doing that. I don't recommend it particularly, but it doesn't sound like you have much of an option right now. So I would say still try to, you know, as soon as you can get them on bloodworms and things, add that to their diet, certainly the live bloodworms. But
and you already emailed him.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I did. But I've heard of people, you know, raising bettas. I remember reading a long time ago, years and years ago, about that, and about how someone had, they didn't really know how to raise bettas, but they had a spawn, and they just powdered the food finely, and out of a batch of who knows how many hundreds of eggs, they had 10 grow up.
Wow.
So it's not optimal.
Doesn't work that great.
Not optimal, but it's possible you could get, you know, some of them might make it. But if you're not up to raising, you know, 300 bettas, then maybe that works out. It's kind of harsh reality, but it may be the way it works.
If he in the future wanted mm-hmm. to try to find a banana worm culture, what would mm-hmm. he need to do?
Well, there are people out there who have talked about this, and I've read about it in books and all kinds of things, even really old books, talk about collecting microworms by getting a potato and digging a 1-inch hole all the way through it, burying it somewhere in the soil,
mm-hmm.
and then taking that potato out, and inside that hole you can kind of scrape out the potato, and there'll be some nematodes like microworms in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can add those to a culture. I've even tried it a couple of times. But I remember the time I tried it in... I've tried it in Utah, you know, years and years ago I tried that. It didn't work very well, probably because the soil was just too dry.
Yeah.
And I tried it in Hawaii once, and came up with an absolutely noxious mess.
It was probably too wet.
There was some sort of fermentation going on in the culture medium. Too much yeast going crazy or something. But anyway, it didn't work. Not to say that it doesn't work, but it didn't work for me. Because in Hawaii, that's what it was. In Hawaii, I wanted to try to raise microworms and so on, but I couldn't. Because I couldn't get any into the state legally. I talked to the Department of Agriculture, and they said, if you can isolate...
To send them from Hawaii.
It must not have been Hawaii, but they said, if you can try to isolate them from the soil, anything that you can get that exists here, then you can culture it. But if you can't get anything shipped in. So what they said. And so I said, oh, okay. And I tried it with a potato and couldn't get it to work. So we didn't do that, and we cultured Molina and other things, amphipods and things there, but yeah. We didn't culture worms until we got back. So, anyway, I would say if you can get dried Artemia or dried brine shrimp eggs, that's what you need to do, because you can hatch those in a couple of days, and you can hatch them within 24 hours, and it'll be a few days before your bettas are in need of anything but infusoria. Although they can eat brine shrimp very shortly after hatching. Even some of them can eat it as soon as they're free swimming. Not all of them will be able to do it, but I would say that's the best way to go if you can get a hold of those. And if you can't, then you can try, as you said, liquidized food. The egg yolk, you can try that. You just have to make sure that you keep the water really clean by siphoning out using the rigid air line and the soft air line to siphon out the gunk off the bottom like we did. That was a time-consuming chore. One of the most time-consuming parts of raising the bettas was siphoning things out off the bottom of the tank, and I did it like twice a day. And just tried to scrape everything meticulously mm-hmm. off to keep the bottom clean. And it paid off. I didn't lose any ventral fins.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of work. So, I think that's about all for this week, isn't it?
I think so. Thank you, everybody, for writing in.
Yeah, we had lots of contributors, and we always appreciate that. And until next time,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquaramax.com.